welcome to episode 18 of the Dad's Army podcast. Thanks ever so much for joining us. I'm afraid you've just got me this week. Tony's taken a fortnight off. Later on, though, I'll be joined by my good friend Claire, and Claire and I are going to be discussing the season one episode, The Enemy Within the Gates. But before all that, we've got the usual feedback we've received from listeners over the last fortnight or so, and we round up all of the Dad's Army news.
But he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So who do you think you are kidding?
Now, regular listeners of the podcast will know that we discussed the Season 3 episode Branded on the last podcast, and Tony and I had quite a detailed discussion, and we touched on a number of areas, as indeed does the episode, that aren't usually covered. It's quite an emotive episode, it's quite serious at moments, and it seems to have generated quite a lot of feedback from listeners. Our first piece of feedback is from Andy. Thanks very much for your comments, Andy. Hi James, I am not sure whether Mannering, Fraser, etc. are being so harsh on Godfrey. You have to put yourself in their shoes. Hitler was across the Channel waiting to invade. Millions of people on continental Europe are dead. Great Britain is getting bombed to hell. You've probably got friends who have been killed. Then you hear somebody say they don't want to fight. The natural reaction is to think that they are some sort of Nazi sympathiser. I may have reacted in the same way. Thanks ever so much, Andy, for putting a different point of view across. And of course, Tony and I were very, very quick to condemn Mannering's attitude to poor old Godfrey, or I'm doing it again, poor old Godfrey. I think Andy's email does actually try to bring us back to the harsh realities of war. And when you really are up against it, to hear someone saying, well, I don't really feel like fighting, is understandable why people would react badly. However, I think it's probably not completely as straightforward as that within the episode Branded, and this is one of the reasons why I like the episode. It's got so many different levels and layers. I think it's clear that Mannering went off half-cocked. He wasn't completely aware of the full story of Godfrey's wartime involvement, and he judged him without knowing the entire story. Godfrey was a hero. He'd won the MM, I think it was, and he'd gone out into no man's land and been incredibly brave, but he was so meek and so humble that even when the platoon and colleagues who he thought were his friends started being really nasty to him, he wasn't going to volunteer the information that he'd been honoured for bravery. And I think that puts a slightly different perspective on it. I mean, on one hand, I see your point, Andy. I don't blame Mannering either for his reaction. But at the same time, he should have actually made some effort to find out the exact nature of Godfrey's circumstances before rejecting him and telling him to get out of his office. Had he done that, then, well, I suppose had he done that, there wouldn't have been much more of an episode to watch. But also, had he done that, then he wouldn't have had to be so humble himself at the end of the episode.
This is the Dad's Army Podcast.
Ian Sherwood has sent us another email. Thanks, Ian. It's always good to hear from you. Hi, James. You and Tony made me re-examine Branded. I really enjoyed how you both look at each episode in detail, and you always seem to make me look at it in a different way. It really adds to my enjoyment of Dad's Army. Well, I'm very pleased, Ian. Ian goes on to say, I have rejoined the Dad's Army Appreciation Society as your podcast has made my favourite show come to life again. I'm off to the stage show in Lowestoft this month. We'll be going to Bressingham in May. Well, I shall also be at Bressingham in May, Ian, for the entire weekend. A little bit more on that coming up shortly. Have you ever thought of looking at the Dad's Army annuals and talking about them? Well, no, is the short answer, Ian. I've not got any of the Dad's Army annuals. However, Tony does have, I think, a complete collection. So it is something we could potentially take a look at later on, and maybe Tony consider reviewing a couple of those annuals in future podcasts. Thanks for the suggestion, and thanks again for getting in touch. On to some news now, and issue 56, the spring 2008 edition of Permission to Speak, Sir, has been published. Now, this is the official magazine from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, and it's only available to members. Now, as we said before, it's always a good publication, but this time it's particularly interesting as it covers a whole number of events being organised over the next couple of months, mainly to do with the 40th anniversary, but I would suggest that you get hold of this particular magazine. It'll bring you up to speed on absolutely everything that's really important in the world of Dad's Army. I'm not on commission from the Appreciation Society, I'm just an enthusiastic member. You can find out all the information you need in order to join at www.dadsarmy.co.uk. Now, we've had quite a few emails from listeners asking us about the competition that we announced a good few podcasts ago now for listeners to nominate their favourite ever episode. And we had a fantastic response to start with. We had well over 60 people nominating their favourite episode. Now, there are prizes up here. There's the stage play programme, that's the latest stage play programme. There's Frank Williams' autobiography, which I may try and get signed if I can get to see him at Bressingham. And there's a few other bits and pieces as well. There's a DVD of Series 1 and Series 2. Now, all you've got to do is send in your email and just tell us what your favourite episode is and just give us one or two lines of explanation. And what I'll do is actually put a deadline on this of the 11th of May, which is the Perry and Croft Day. So what I'm going to try and do is get a member of the cast or get a celebrity or someone there to try and draw this competition, and we'll make the announcement live at Bressingham as to who has won those prizes. So if you haven't nominated your favourite episode yet, then just send in your email. You've got two email addresses you can contact us on these days, either james@dadsarmypodcast.com or our original email address, which I'm still checking, which is warmingtononc333@yahoo.co.uk.
Have you logged on to the Perry and Croft forum yet? Well, if you are a fan of Jimmy Perry and David Croft's programmes and you haven't taken a look, then you are missing out. But don't panic, you can still join the thriving online community who discuss every conceivable aspect of Dad's Army, Urang Milord, Heidi High and many others at perryandcroft.co.uk, and click on the link to the forum.
While stumbling around the internet, as I do, trying to find bits and pieces on Dad's Army, I came across a tribute site on MySpace to James Beck. Now, this is a particularly good page. It chronicles all of James Beck's career. It's got practically everything that he's ever starred in, which extends far beyond Dad's Army, and has a lot of interesting features, some really good photographs, and some videos as well that you can see Jimmy acting in. The web address is www.myspace.com/JamesBeck29. Now, I'll put a link to that on both the podcast webpage and also on the Dad's Army podcast blog, where you can just go along and click on the link and get directly onto that particular page. And you're able to leave comments as well if you so wish, as many, many people have. The site owner, Katie, has clearly spent a lot of time in designing the website and also researching James Beck's career. Anyone who's got an interest in James Beck, or Dad's Army for that matter, will get a lot out of this website. Once again, the URL is www.myspace.com/JamesBeck29.
What would Mrs. Mopp say to you?
She would say, "Can I do you now, sir?"
"Here's a good one, sir. Who won the boat race in 1935?
Cambridge.
He's right, you know.
It was raining at the time.
Was it? Look here, who the hell are you?
I'm Captain Winogradsky from the Polish Free Forces attached to GHQ.
Why didn't you say so in the first place?
I'd like to introduce a new voice to the show. Hello, Claire. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, James. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So, The Enemy Within the Gates, an early episode from Series 1. Did it meet your expectations of an old BBC black and white comedy?
Well, actually, it exceeded them. Well, I have to say, my expectations weren't that high, because I've more heard about Dad's Army than seen it. I may have seen it a couple of times when I was a child, but I'm basically a newcomer. And my expectations weren't high, but they were well exceeded by this. I was very surprised.
No, it's extremely rare that any of the black and white episodes of Dad's Army make it onto the television these days anyway. And that's because the BBC has some strange belief that people aren't interested in the old comedies. And I think the first couple of series of Dad's Army is a really good argument against that. Because
it's really interesting you should say that, because one of the first things I've got down as I thought about this is that I thought the black and white worked really well, because the subject matter comes from a period that we associate with seeing in black and white from Pathé films and things.
No, indeed. And I think the way that that's demonstrated quite clearly is the opening of the episode, where they integrate original war footage into specifically cut scenes.
And that was brilliant. Suddenly, because I thought the motorbike was going to be serious, and then James popped out. Excellent, yes.
Now, they do that on, I believe, all of the first two series, so that's the first 12 episodes, and it adds, I think, an air of authenticity. into the setting, which is a shame in a way that it changed, the whole feel of the programme changed Series 3 onwards when they went into colour. The first scene was set mainly in the bank. I mean, the whole episode, I think, is studio-bound, even the wood, the forest, and so on, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I always enjoy the opening scenes of Dad's Army. I mean, they hadn't formed yet quite into the lineup, and the later episodes of Dad's Army traditionally started with a lineup and just a little bit of banter going on. But most of the early ones started within the bank, and that was a familiar setting. This bank set is larger than the other bank sets in the later episodes. I'm always surprised at how young Ian Lavender looks, though, in these in these episodes.
Yes. On your point about the bank, what I noticed about that, it was a comment on British class hierarchy, efficiency, inefficiency. Mm. And having it set in the bank not only establishes Manwaring as trying to climb his way up the greasy pole and be the person on top, and hopelessly undermined all the time by his second-in-command, or wanting to be, but setting it in the bank sets him up as that character and somebody who's really wanting to be somebody.
It does, and it sets up an interesting parody, actually, because although Mannering is striving and continually strives to be upper class, Wilson achieves it effortlessly because he already is, and he, of course, reports to Mannering. And to be fair, most of the humour between those two characters is based on the class disparity, and I think that's it's actually interesting you picked it up as someone who doesn't watch Dad's Army very often, as how key that is to the humour of the show.
I think it's a dynamic that's still going on in certain places, actually.
Well, it's a good premise. I mean, a lot of the comedies today don't examine the interaction between the main characters and doesn't automatically create that basis of humour for the writers to play with throughout all of the episodes. It's very much here, now, that's funny, one joke, and then move straight on to the next one. So much so, something like The Fast Show even called itself The Fast Show because it moves so fast.
Yeah, there is a loss of subtlety in some of those things, which is a shame because we are bright enough to be able to appreciate all of that.
Yes, I agree.
But I did like, also, was that in the first scene or the second, where he's establishing himself as this wannabe important Manwaring. I'm sorry, I'm not very good on people's names with this. He's establishing himself as this, you know, I want to be somebody in charge, and this is all right. And then he says, we are a compact fighting unit. And he goes on that whole speech and then ends up, and now we have caps.
Yes.
I love that bit.
No, I know, it's good. But that, again, although it's funny, and it's definitely intended to be funny, reflects, you know, how the Home Guard originally was set up with nothing more than, you know, armbands and caps. And they see, the characters or the people who are actually in the Home Guard saw that as a real milestone.
There's a sort of Britishness. There's a kind of ramble, and we have caps. And in a way, that's kind of reflected later on in later comedies, like the verbal pieces of Yes Minister, where they ramble on in a whole stream and there's some very tiny outcome that comes from it. It's the same dynamic.
Yes, yeah, I know what you're saying. Moving on to the church hall scene, where the this is a little bit more of a familiar setup for Dad's Army. You got the lineup, and Mannering giving a lecture on how to recognise German infiltrators, and of course he's talking about the accent, and Karl Jaffe's Captain Vino Gorudzki comes in. If I said his name correctly, I think it's quite
good. I'm impressed you've got it at all.
But that obviously is, I think, is quite funny. And it's not something that you would see today, perhaps, a scene that's written around someone's misunderstanding or lack of understanding English. But I thought that scene was extremely funny, and I thought Vino Gorudzki was a good character, and I like the way that he was introduced there.
I absolutely agree, and it also added an element of plot to it, which I wasn't actually expecting, because there's not much plot in comedies these days particularly. Not that that matters, but it added an element of plot. Because I don't know, I usually sit watching things thinking, how's this going to end? How would I make this end if I was doing this? And I actually thought that he would turn out to be a Nazi after all, so it sort of added in this kind of thing.
No, it was very clever. Well, of course he was. He was classed as a Nazi in the end, but that's because Walker, that's because Walker set him up. But he got an extra 10 quid out of it as well. The feel that I get, particularly from the first two scenes we've already spoken about, is the level of enthusiasm from the characters here is much greater than you see later on. Now, people associate, I mean, we touched on this earlier on, but people associate Mannering as being a character who's stuffy, who's class-orientated, and quite cynical occasionally, although, you know, beneath it all, he's quite patriotic and motivated. But I thought in this episode in particular, he came across particularly enthusiastic, or the character did, about what he was doing, and I thought that was quite unique. I think it's true, I mean, a lot of people say that these early episodes do contrast quite significantly with the later shows, and some people don't like them because of that, but I actually like seeing how the characters grow and develop, and all of the characters here seem very caught up in the seriousness of the war as well. It's a very all-encompassing scenario, whereas later on in the series, although it never loses its accurate representation of wartime, it doesn't always draw its stories directly from the war, whereas this one was. I mean, they met the German officers, which again was very funny, who were two British actors, as it turned out, a guy called Dennis Peakes and another one called Nigel Rideout. And it was just very, very war-related, and yet it was very upbeat and optimistic.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if we're going to move straight on to the discussion of that scene. I thought that was the funniest piece. Possibly because we wouldn't see anything like that anymore.
No, not at all.
Where the actors playing the German infiltrators, they're standing up and they go, British inefficiency. We've lightened up for 2 minutes and we still haven't been captured. Just hysterical. Loved it.
I thought it was great. I mean, it's funny in its own right, but I also think it's quite novel for that time because I'm not familiar with all of the TV of that period, but I don't remember ever seeing comedy made on subtitles that long ago, because they are speaking German. You know, they're genuinely speaking German. Unless you understood German, then you'd have to read the subtitles on the screen. And it was funny, and I too was laughing just by reading their lines. And, I mean, they mentioned the war dance there, Jones doing his war dance when he discovers the Germans, when he was moving his rifle between the two guys. They also referred to the weather. It was cold. You know, it couldn't possibly have taken a wrong turn in Africa. It was far too cold for that. And obviously, they thought Jones was a colonial soldier. And I just thought it was funny because all of that was in German. So I thought that worked extremely well.
But I mean, in terms of that scene, and I think that this may be me just being too highfalutin for the subject, but what struck me was that when we did, I mean, this is some while ago, so somebody out there who knows more about this, you know, correct me on this. But as I remember it, the point about Shakespeare is that you have very comic scenes and then less comic scenes, and then you sort of change the scene. And I thought, wow, this has actually been written by somebody who respects that structure, because you had the business with the swan, and then the airman who popped up being vaguely serious but doing some of this, and then you went into the sort of seriousness of chasing them and bringing back that actually this was wartime. And it made it much more, it made the humour stand out more, that it was contrasted with something else, and there was just this nice structure. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, perfectly. And you've hit on what I think makes Dad's Army special, is because obviously, when this was originally broadcast, the war was still fresh in far more people's minds, and you remember, you probably would expect that such a comedy set in wartime would court controversy, and the show did originally, because it deliberately made, you know, serious situations quite funny. But they did it in such a way, I think, respected the war and the seriousness. And the way in which I think this worked, I'm just giving an example really of what you've outlined, was where you have Pike, Jones and Walker just about to, well, they shot the swan, as it turned out. But the way that was done, I mean, you could tell, it was a set and there was trees. But I don't know if you noticed, you never saw the swan. You never saw what they were looking at.
No!
And eventually, it was like watching a performance at a theatre.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And that, to me, stuck out. Again, I've seen this episode hundreds of times, and I've never noticed that before. But when I was watching it to discuss with you as I am now, I actually thought that was done well because they commentated on what was happening. And Dad's Army, later episodes, draw very heavily on visual humour.
Yeah.
This was like a radio show.
I can imagine that, yeah. What? You just put your finger on why I thought it was Shakespearean, I think, because I thought if this little piece with the swan and the piece after was in something like A Midsummer Night's Dream, you wouldn't be at all surprised, because if one of them had a donkey head, it wouldn't necessarily be surprising me. But yes, it's that. It's that structural thing. What's the background of Croft and Perry?
Oh, it's a long story. Dad's Army was an idea from Jimmy Perry, as I'm sure most of the listeners are aware, and he drawing on his experiences from the Home Guard.
Ah, so he really was in the Home Guard.
He was in the Home Guard. The only other cast member who was in the Home Guard was John Lorry, who plays Fraser, who is remarkably absent from this episode. He only had about three lines, I think, if that.
And is it possible, just thinking about that, is it possible that the real experience in the Home Guard was that they started off very enthusiastic and very serious about it, and Britain was in peril or under threat, and then as the war got on, people started not taking it so seriously, just as a survival.
It's remarkable.
Perhaps it reflects that.
Have you been listening to our previous podcasts?
Looks round hastily.
You haven't really.
I'm messing you around, but no, I haven't. Seriously.
No, there's two episodes that Tony and I have discussed that are centred around the Home Guard not being taken seriously and Mannering taking some action in order to shake Warmington out of its complacency. And that was probably 2 or 3 months ago we discussed that. But maybe you're right, maybe to start with, you know, I don't know whether it was on purpose or perhaps whether it just happened naturally, but the way that they enacted the comedy changed significantly. To start with, as I said, it was much more enthusiastic, and towards the end it almost, not quite, but bordered on cynical humour. But it was quite good. Moving on then towards to the last couple of scenes, really. And we go back to the office, and of course there's lots of. I mean, this is the only part of the episode that I wasn't really very keen on, was all of the opening and closing of the door and turning on and off of the lights. So I thought it was a very basic joke.
It's more farcical, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's more visual.
I think, I could be wrong here, but I think it was written to just get Hodges a couple of lines. And of course, Hodges is famous for saying, put that light out. And he was only in the episode during that scene where he came in to say, I think your enemy agents signalled into the aircraft above.
And maybe also, for people who were going through the experience, that was something that would have been more easily recognisable for a lot of people in 1968.
Quite possibly.
As something that has happened to them.
Yes, quite possibly. Again, it's all based in reality. What is funny, though, is that Hodges' line, obviously, is put that light out, and Jones says that this episode, just when Walker's lighting up a cigarette in the woods. So you go, put that light out, you might be a sniper around, and that's normally Hodges'
line. I hadn't connected those, I hadn't picked that up, but I suppose... Again, that's an example of these internal resonances that are there. It's the structure.
Absolutely.
Then it's not a story in a straight line that's predictable, but it has a nice roundness and all these echoes in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree. I think there's two final things that I've got on this episode. First of all, it's Mannering's exasperation in this episode seems to grow and increase with the audience's appreciation of how crazy this scenario is. They capture him and they lose him, and Godfrey lets them out because they're in the toilet, and he lets them go by mistake. And I think Mannering actually says at one point, holy suffering cats or something like that. And you can appreciate his exasperation, but that changes again in latter episodes, whereby you think Mannering is the cause of a lot of the problems, not his men, as in this case. His men, although Jones, who is not so crazy in this episode, as he usually is relatively normal. The others let Mannering down. They let the Germans go, which is not good.
Well, there's two really interesting points in there. I mean, his frustration, absolutely. I identify that with this sort of, almost this kind of grammar school conflict, and the sort of, I really want to be somebody, and these people are letting me down, and if they could all just be as good as I am. But if you take that attitude to the nth degree, what usually happens in life is that people end up tying themselves up in bureaucratic knots.
No, very true.
So maybe they were just taking that character to its
extreme.
To the extreme development of that thing is Jones. Now, in this episode, I liked Jones.
Yeah.
And the reason I liked Jones, it wasn't actually so much about Jones. It was more about the contrast between Jones and Pike, because you would expect the younger guy to be the one who was full of the urge for war and going around killing people, especially as his mates were probably off wherever. But it's actually Jones, the older guy, who's pretty homicidal in the episode. And I thought that contrast was really lovely. And Jones's character gets away with a lot more because he looks so old.
Well,
and it's funnier because that's coming out of his mouth and not somebody else's.
No, it's true. I mean, with Pike, I think it's more innocence as opposed to not embracing the war as much as Jones.
You'd expect him to run home to Mum, you wouldn't?
Yes, very much so.
Probably another of those, rather than go out and say, "Go, let's go and get them with a bayonet."
No, I know what you mean. Jones in particular is an old war horse, allegedly. But and this episode now, I mean, listeners will know that I don't like Jones generally, because I think the writers didn't always know how to bring out the best in Jones, and sometimes they made him into a complete gibbering idiot. Other times, and this is what was really annoying, because it showed the potential of the character, they really gave him a sensible story, lines, and you could actually respect and understand the character, especially when they picture him in his butcher's shop and so on.
Right.
That you know, in this particular episode, he wasn't as crazy. He was much more rational, I think, and I'm not actually sure whether they'd written his character to the extremes it actually reached by this point. I mean, this is only the fourth episode ever of that time.
Oh, right.
So it's a really, really early stage in the development of each of these characters. But no, I liked all of the characters here. I was just disappointed that Fraser only got one or two lines. Godfrey's inclusion was to let the Germans out the loo, and that was it. But even at the end, when all of the platoon, all of the main members of the platoon, are in the office, Fraser is notable by his absence there. So.
Walker may not have done very much in the episode, or said very much, but he had a pivotal role in
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And that neat ending with, "Oh well, shall we all eat swan?"
Yeah, well, it shows the camaraderie, which again is the heart of the series. You know, it shows, you know, people facing up to adversity in a very British way, a very British traditional way.
Now we have cats.
Well, there you go, you see. They got you, didn't they? Now we have cats. Anyway, last thing to ask you, Claire, then out of a score of 5, what would you give this episode?
It's 5 high.
5 is high, 1 is low.
So oh, well, my expectations were that it was going to be about 1.
Right.
Let's be really honest, not to offend anybody out there, but, you know, I was not expecting it. My feeling about it at the end was that it was about 4.
Excellent.
So,
no, it's good.
So, yeah.
My mark on this one is also a 4, I would say. It's not absolutely superb, but it's definitely one of the better earlier episodes, and it does show the realities of war very clearly, I think. So, anyway, Claire, thank you very much for spending the time recording your thoughts on the podcast.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
That's it for this week. Hope you really enjoyed the podcast. We'll be back in a fortnight's time, where we'll be discussing Time on My Hands. So if you have any comments about that episode, then please get in touch with us, warmington@yahoo.co.uk, or james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Either of those email addresses will get through to us. Hope you have a really good couple of weeks, and we'll speak to you again very soon.